Good morning, folks. And this is Ed Lopez from Rochester, New York. And I want to welcome you to our first in a six-part series of webinars for individuals who are involved with the Office of Persons with Developmental Disabilities. My good friend, Nicole Sudo, from OPWDD, first acronym you get to hear today, was going to be on today's call, but she had an emergency. She had to take her husband to the emergency room with what appears to be kidney stones. So she cannot be here, but she sends everybody her regards, and she encourages everybody here to attend all six of our webinars, one this month, one next week in the first week of December, then two in January and two in February. Each of these webinars is also going to be archived. And so at some point, Nicole will send each and every one of you and all the people that she sent the notices to already a link where you can view the sessions if you want, or where others can view them again if they want. But my friends, I'm going to get us started here, and let me just tell you that as we go through, you'll notice that there's an audio mode, and on the right hand side of your computer there's a control panel, and that control panel has an audio icon button. And if you go to that button, you'll notice that it says either use telephone or use mic and speakers. And most folks will use the mic and the speakers. But if they can't, what happens then is they click on use telephone, up will pop up a dial-in number, an access code, and an audio pin, not the one that you see here now. When that is dialed, voila, folks then can link on and listen to the dulcet tones of Ed Lopez. Additionally, during this session, I am going to encourage folks to ask questions. To me, it makes a session better. And I will try to get to all the questions before the session is over. The way you ask questions is that on that same control panel, you will see that there's a questions box, and you click on it, and there's a space where you can actually type in a question and then hit send, and then lo and behold, I will get it and I will then be able to answer the question. I will tell you right now that if a question is asked that I think is important while I am doing a presentation, I will actually stop the presentation at that point and answer the question if I think it will move along the discussion. If I think it won't, I will wait to the point but I think the discussion would be best and most appropriate. So let us get started. Everybody here knows that the Supplemental Security Income Program is a program for individuals that happen to be disabled, but more importantly, that happen to be disabled and poor. Simple as that, disabled and poor. And in 2011, the SSI living alone rate, or living with others rate, is based on a federal benefit rate, which is $674. That is it, $674. If a person is living in somebody else's household and they're not paying their full share of the household expenses, it's $449.34. Now, my friends, what you need to know is that to that $674 in New York State, we add $87 if the individual is living alone, $87, and we add $23 if the individual is living with others. So either 87 or 23 are added to it. And that's why people often hear the words 761 if you live alone and 697 if you live with others being the SSI rate. If a person lives in somebody else's household and they do not pay their fair share of the household expenses, they actually will only be entitled to a $449.34 federal benefit rate amount plus the $23 because they live with others. And that is it. So it is a program designed for individuals who happen to be disabled and also happen to be poor. Now, income plays a major role in the SSI program. You already heard me say that SSI is needs-based. You have to be poor, not just be a disabled individual, but you must also be poor. So the amount that an individual can get is changed by both earned income and by unearned income. And lo and behold, each is treated very differently. And another term you need to know, and I'm going to cover the terms first and then give you lots of examples, is countable income. And that's the part of a person's earned and or unearned income that's going to be counted, that will be used to decrease the SSI payment amount. And of course, we all know that in the SSI world, not all income is counted and not all income is treated the same way. So deductions and exclusions from income result in less countable income. And I'm going to talk to you about those deductions and exclusions in a couple of minutes. Now let's look at what income means, because this is very important. First, income is anything received that can be used, okay, to meet the needs for food or shelter. It can be cash or it can be in-kind assistance, but if it can be used to meet the needs for food or shelter, it is going to be income and it typically is going to count. Now there's two types of income. One is earned income and the other is unearned income. And now let's look at earned income first. Earned income is the money that an individual receives because they have performed a service. In other words, they have gone out and worked. SSA always looks at the gross wages. That basically means the amount of your paycheck before taxes are taken out. But let me tell you right away that at the end of the year, when the individual who's on SSI, who is working and not making tons and tons of money, files their income tax returns, they will get all that money back. And at that point, the Social Security Administration does not count it as income because they've already counted it as income before. So what are some examples? Well, bonuses are income. Net earnings from self-employment are income. Even sheltered workshop earnings are income. Royalties for a book, income. Now, what's unearned income? Well, unearned income basically is all income that is received that's not earned income. And let me tell you that unearned income is counted when it is actually or constructively received. And that's a very important concept. Everybody understands what the word actually means, actually received when they get it. But constructively received basically means if that money is available to you, but yet you choose not to take it, you will be deemed to have constructively received it and to not have taken it so that it doesn't count as unearned income. So when it is actually or constructively received. And what are some examples of unearned income? Well, let's think about this for a minute. If a person is getting SSDI benefits in addition to SSI benefits, then the SSDI is unearned income. The SSI is never considered unearned income because that's what you're ultimately going to be getting. But everything else, unemployment insurance benefits, unearned income. Workers' compensation, unearned income. Veterans' benefits, unearned income. Uncle Sam gives Sally, who's getting SSI, $50 a month, unearned income. Simple as that. It's anything else that a person gets for which they have performed no service whatsoever. Now, you'll notice here that I've listed a general income exclusion. And we're going to go through a couple of budgetary examples later. But I wanted to give you these concepts one at a time so you get and to understand them. No matter what kind of income comes into the household, that income is entitled to what's known as a general income exclusion. And that's a $20 general income exclusion. That's the first item that's applied to any unearned income. Now, if there is no unearned income coming into the house, it then gets applied to the earned income. But that $20 general income exclusion or disregard is always going to be the first item that gets taken off. Now, let's look at earned income. For earned income, you have all other exclusions apply to earned income and earned income only. And here's how it works. With the earned income, remember what I said. If you have no unearned income, then that $20 exclusion comes off the earned income if there's no unearned income. And then you subtract $65 additional earned income exclusion. And then you take what's left and you divide it by two. Now that's incredible. And you'll probably know and remember that many people have probably said to you or to your families over the years that when a person goes to work and they have no unearned income, they're entitled to what's known as the 20 plus 65 plus half the remainder exclusion. And that's where it comes from. 20, 65, and half the remainder exclusion. That's where it comes from. And now, my friends, at this point, just to get everybody involved here, we are going to go to our first polling question. And the first polling question reads as follows. The more you work, the more money you have to spend. Okay? True or false? The more you work, the more money you have to spend. True or false? And Michael, I want to make sure that folks are seeing that question up there since I can't see it on my computer.
Yes, people are seeing that question.
Great, great. Yeah, I see people now responding to it too. Great. Oh, this is great. This is a terrific first question, and I asked it for a very specific reason. We've gone through 49 seconds, and we've got already 90% of you have voted, and that's terrific. Absolutely terrific. I'm going to give you about another 10 seconds. I'm going to move it right along here. All right, I'm going to close the poll. And I'm going to share the results with you. Now you will notice that the results show that 41% said true. The more you work, the more you have to spend. And 59% said false. Well, I'm going to tell you, I agree with the truths here. And the reason I ask this question is that this is a myth that exists out there in the SSI world, that if you work, you basically will have less money to spend. And the reason that myth exists is that people often think about the SSI going down. But in fact, with the $20 disregard, with the $65 disregard, with another half of it being disregarded, an individual on SSI who goes to work will always have more money to spend. So that was actually terrific, terrific, terrific way of doing it. And I am going to move on, and we're going to cover this in a little more detail now by giving you some more information. First, if an individual goes to work, the first thing they've got to think about is reporting their earnings to the Social Security Administration. And then they've got to save the receipts. Okay? And of course, they're supposed to give receipts and copies of receipts to Social Security. But you still need to save receipts. If an individual is spending money in order to go to work, okay, and we're going to cover this later, save those receipts because you may be entitled to a work incentive. And SSA determines whether that work incentive will be allowed or not. Now, let me tell you one that's really interesting. It's that last bullet. It says there, you may see a change in your SSI check about 3 months after you start earning money. But you'll still be getting more money overall. Absolutely still be getting more money overall. But Social Security works on something called a retrospective monthly accounting. And what that basically means is that the money that you earn in January, that Ed Lopez earns in January, gets counted in March. So it's always a couple of months behind. And we always want people to understand that. And at times, it can be very detrimental because if a person has been working and earned money 2 months before, but now 2 months later, they're no longer working, their SSI check is still going to be lower because they're counting the monies earned 2 months before. Okay? So very important that folks understand the retrospective monthly accounting principle. Then you have to look at the different types of income that the individual has and in the right order and use the deductions and the exclusions in the right order so that you know what the correct change in the SSI check is going to be. And to make sure you do the steps in the right order, I always say use an SSI calculation worksheet. And there it is, the SSI calculation worksheet. Now you'll notice, my friends, that I basically divided the SSI calculation worksheet into five steps. Five steps, you notice that. Step one is all about unearned income. So when you look at this right here, you'll notice step one is all about unearned income. And if there is unearned income, we count that first and we subtract how much? $20 from whatever unearned income exists. And that becomes the countable unearned income. Step two is all about gross earned income. Earned income. And I'm just going to say this right away. If we're talking about a student under age 22 who's getting SSI, who is working, there is a special student earned income exclusion that I will get to later on this morning. Then, if there's an IDA, Individual Development Account contribution, that gets also deducted. Then, if you did not use the $20 above, see this here, general income exclusion, then you use it here. But you don't use it above and again in step two. You can only use it once. Either you use it in step one, or if you did not use it in step one, you then carried it over to step two. Then you get the earned income exclusion, which is $65. Then, if the person has any impairment-related work expenses, they get deducted. Then you divide by 2. Okay? You'll notice that after that, there's blind work expenses after the division. What that should be telling you right away, and we're going to cover this later, is that with impairment-related work expenses, you basically have a 1-for-2, but for blind work expenses, you have a $1-for-$1, 1-for-1. And I'm going to cover this in quite a bit of detail for you later this morning. Step 3 basically says, hey, what's your total countable unearned income, and what's your total countable earned income together? Let's add them up. So we have a total countable income. Step 4 then says, hey, what's your base SSI rate? And let's subtract the total countable income. So we know how much SSI you are supposed to be getting. And then step 5 takes you to the, hey, how much better off are you by working? What's the total income coming to the household? And I'm going to cover now a couple of examples that'll bring this whole scenario to life for you. And let's take the case of Ted. And Ted has a disability, and Ted lives alone. He receives $385 a month in Social Security disability insurance benefits. Now, we all know that SSDI is unearned income. So it is entitled to a $20 general income exclusion. So look at what we've got here now. Step 1, 385, take away 20, 365. That's the total countable income. In this case, since the only income he's got is unearned income, you take that total countable income and you subtract it from his SSI base rate, which, because he lives alone, is $761. So his SSI check is going to be $396. Now, if we go to the next page, you'll notice that the income available to Ted is going to be greater if he gets both SSDI and SSI. He's going to have $781 a month total instead of $761. And that's because of the $20 that's been disregarded from the SSDI. That is how Social Security treats unearned income. So if a person has only unearned income, you take the unearned income, you subtract 20, that gives you the total unearned income. You then subtract that, going right back to the prior page here for a minute, so I can show you from the SSI base rate, and that gives you your SSI amount. And then you say, how much money altogether? $781. Now let's look at a different budget example. In this case, Ted still lives alone. But instead of getting SSDI of $385, he's working. He is working and earning $385 a month. What SSI does is the following. Since there was no unearned income, they disregard $20 as general income exclusion and the $65 earned income disregard. And then they take off another 50%. So look at this now, because this is pretty incredible. $385 are the gross wages. When you take away $20, that leaves $365. When you take away the $65 earned income disregard, that leaves $300. When you take an additional 50% that's disregarded, that leaves $150. So even though Ted earned $85 in that month, Social Security is only counting 150 of it. And so his SSI will only be reduced by $150. That basically means that in this example, Ted, even though he is earning $385 a month, is going to be getting an SSI check $611, because out of that $385, only $150 of it is countable income. Extremely important concept here, my friends. Extremely important. Now let's take it one step further. What's the income that is going to be available to Ted, okay, if he is working? Well, look at this. Ted's going to be getting $385 in gross wages plus $611 in her monthly SSI check for a total of $996 instead of $761 in SSI only. So he's better off by working. Now, I will tell you right now that what my folks always say to me when I'm explaining this to an SSI person is, but Mr. Lopez, my SSI is going down. And the answer is, yes, your SSI is going down, but your total monthly income is going up. Work pays. It pays for you to work. And then they'll say, but Mr. Lopez, that $996 is not a real figure because I have to pay taxes on it. And I always say, but my friend, at the end of the year, when you file your tax return, you will get every penny back. And then the person will often say, but Mr. Lopez, what I won't get back is the money I paid for FICA. And I will say, yes, you will get that back too, because you will be entitled to an earned income tax credit that was designed to give people who happen to be poor, who happen to be working, the monies back that they get to pay in FICA themselves. So work pays, my friends. Work absolutely pays. Now let's look at a third example. This third example is going to be quite different. And the reason it is going to be different is that even though Ted still lives alone, he now has both unearned income and earned income. So he's got a $385 a month Social Security Disability Insurance benefit. And he also earns $265 at his job. Now what happens? First, the SSI program will disregard $20 from Ted's SSDI benefits, okay? So let's see how this works. Then SSI is going to disregard both the $65 and half the remainder from the earned income. So let's look at this very carefully. First, $385 in SSDI. How much is disregarded? $20, leaving $365 in countable unearned income. That would be step one. Step two, how much earned income do we have? $265. Do we disregard $20 again? No, because we've already disregarded it in the unearned income column. But we do disregard $65 because that's the earned income disregard. That leaves $200. Now, we say, but we still have to disregard 50% more. Remember, 20, 65, half the remainder. There's the half. 200 take away 100 is $100. So out of the 265 that Ted has earned, only $100 of it is counted towards his SSI. So now you add the countable unearned income and you add the countable earned income. And that's 465 altogether. Because he lives alone, Ted would have been getting $761 in SSI as a base rate. But since he's got countable income of 465, guess what? His monthly SSI check will only be $296. Now, this is pretty incredible because look at what happens here. How much money does Ted have to live on when he's getting SSDI, when he's earning money, and when he's getting an SSI check too? Well, he's getting an SSDI check of $385. He's got earned income of $265. And he's got a monthly SSI check of $296 for a grand total of $946. And boy, $946 is a lot better than $761. And again, he's going to get any monies that he pays in taxes back at the end of the year. And the FICA money will also come back to him through the earned income tax credit. So work pays for a person on SSI. Absolutely pays to work. Now, remember when I said to you that if an individual is a student and they go to work, that they get a special exclusion, and I showed it to you right away in the calculation worksheet, and we're going to cover that again in a minute. But look at what we have here, because this is pretty incredible. Up to the first $1,640 in earned income is not counted against the SSI payment for students under age 22 in 2011. Now, it doesn't mean that they can do that each and every month, because if you look at the third bullet, it says that you get to keep up to a total of $6,600 in 2011. And let me tell you why that is. Even though it's $1,640 a month, what Social Security and Congress was thinking about was that a student needs to be able to make money during the summer months. And then during the regular school months, they need to be studying. They can have some work, but they can't be making as much. So they only give them $6,600 total in 2011 and up to $1,640 a month for those summer months. Now, that student must be regularly attending school. Very important. And I'm going to cover that definition in a minute. And finally, this exclusion, which is just incredible to me, is applied before any other exclusion. And let me tell you what that means. Let's take Ed Lopez. And let's assume that Ed Lopez, wishful thinking, was 20 years of age and in college. And Ed Lopez gets a job as an intern with Microsoft. And Ed Lopez is paid $1,500 in July and $1,500 in August. Well, if you look at that last bullet, it says this exclusion is applied before any other exclusion. That basically means, my friends, that Ed Lopez will be earning $1,500. Is that $1,500 more than or less than $1,640? Less than $1,640. That means the entire amount will be excluded. So Ed Lopez will earn $1,500 in July and $1,500 in August and yet still get his full SSI check. Amazing, isn't it? Absolutely amazing. That is what it means. Now look at that calculation again, because it'll bring it right to light to you. If you look at step two, gross earned income, let me put in, and you know my handwriting is just beautiful here, $1,500 for that month. Oh yeah, I sometimes, you know, I'm not the best with this. And then the student earned income exclusion, since it's less than 1640, you exclude the whole thing in the summer. How much is left? Zero. Zero is left. So when you get to step four, 761, take away zero, it's going to give them a 761 check. Simple as, oh my goodness, if I could only, 761 check. That is how it works. Now, let's look at what regularly attending school means. That means that a student takes one or more courses of study and that they attend classes. In high school, starting in grade 7 and up to 21 years of age for 12 hours a week. That's basically a half-time student. In college or university for 8 hours a week. That's basically a half-time student. Or in a training course to prepare for employment for 12 hours a week or 15 hours if it involves shop practice. That's basically half-time student. Or, this is the biggie, for less time than indicated above, less time than indicated above for reasons beyond the student's control, such as illness. So if there is a major disability component that prevents them from attending school regularly, which means about half time, they might still be entitled to the incentive if that reason is caused by an illness, okay? Simple as that. It's an amazing work incentive for students. Now, if a student has to stay at home because of a disability, and a lot of our folks do that, regularly attending school means studying a course or courses given by a high school, college, university, or government agency, and then the biggie, and having a home visitor or tutor who directs the study. Okay? So you need someone there directing the study. Now, a question came in that I wanted to answer right away because it's a question that's right on point here. Right on point. Is there any exclusion for trainees or students above 22 years of age? There is no student earned income exclusion at all for individuals above 22 years of age. That's a great question. And let me tell you, we have been lobbying for that change for quite a bit, because I've got to tell you that a lot of the individuals with disabilities that I work with are people who are over age 22, who have basically not been able to continue their studies when they were younger, and now as they are older, they're going back, and they're going back to school, and they would benefit from this great work incentive. But unfortunately, Congress has not changed the law, and it's a law that must be changed by Congress. That was a great question. Great question. Moving right along here, remember that I mentioned to you impairment-related work expenses. And what are impairment-related work expenses? Well, let's look at them in a little bit of detail here. And I'm going to go through the definition, okay? Impairment-related work expenses are used for items or services that help a person with a disability to work. Now, let me just right up front say the following. Look at the words impairment related. Next, work. Next, expense. So we're going to cover these now in very, very, very in good detail, because you'll notice that the second bullet tells you that an individual who's got an impairment-related work expense can get back up to 50%. 50%. Remember I said, because you do the math and then you divide by two, so you get 50%. But look at this, of out-of-pocket costs. So it's got to be an expense to the individual. It cannot be expense or reimbursed by somebody else in order to be an IRB. If AccessVR pays for the item, it's not an expense to the individual. It is an expense to AccessVR. It cannot be an IRWI. An IRWI can reduce countable income, of course, and it can increase the SSI cash payment. Because if the person is spending $100 on an impairment-related work expense, their SSI is going to be increased by half that amount. So $50 because of the IRWI. So that's a very good work incentive. IRWIs can be used even if the items and services are also needed for everyday non-work activities. For example, if a person is paying for a helper to come in and help them get ready to go to work, and look, they might need work and help getting out of bed, showering, bathing, etc. But if they couldn't do that, they couldn't get to work. So it's needed for everyday non-work activities also. You can count it as an IRWI. Now, my friends, I'm going to take you to the second polling question. And this is a review of what we just covered a few minutes ago. And the question is, students receiving SSI can work over the summer and keep most of what they earn. True or false? Students receiving SSI can work over the summer and keep most of what they earn. True or false? So let's see you guys answer the question. And Michael, again, tell me if I've launched the poll since I can't on my computer.
Yes, I can see the poll.
Yep, I just saw it. Thank you. Thank you, Mike. This answer, this is very good. We've got almost 90% of you having voted already in 39 seconds. And as of right now, I'm not going to say it's going to stay this way. The answers have been unanimous. And everybody has been correct. So, in fact, with over 90% of the vote in, I'm going to close the poll and I'm going to share the results. And you will notice that the results are pretty amazing. 100% of you said absolutely true. And that's correct. Absolutely true, 100%. And zero people said false. And the answer was absolutely correct. Students receiving SSI can work and actually keep most of the money that they earn. That's absolutely correct. And lo and behold, just keep in mind, as you do this, just keep in mind that the student has to be under age 22. That's the biggie here. Now, going on with IRWIs, we have to ask, is it an IRWI? I get these questions all the time. People say, well, my client has this item. Is it an IRWI? And I'm always going to ask you the same exact questions. First, was the expense needed due to a physical or mental impairment? Was it an impairment-related expense? If the answer is yes, you go to the next question. Do you need it to work? Impairment-related, work. The third question, was the expense paid for by the individual? If the answers are yes, yes, and yes, needed because of an impairment, needed in order to work, paid for by the individual himself or herself, then it's an ERWI. It is an ERWI. Simple as that. And if somebody in this audience were to send me a question about an ERWI, I would always say to them, there's three questions that I want you to answer. And once we answer those three questions, you can then tell me whether you think they're an ERWI or not. Okay? So just wanted you to know that. Now, in general, the cost must have been paid in a month in which a beneficiary worked, obviously, and the expenses have to be reasonable. And that's, you know, that's well understood, but I wanted everybody to know that, you know, those are two items that are very important, because how can it be a work expense if the person is not working, correct? Now, Social Security has something known as a red book, and it provides examples, just so you know, it provides examples of acceptable impairment-related work expenses. That list is never, ever going to be all-inclusive, and they should not stop an individual from claiming an expense that's not listed if it meets the three criteria: that the individual needed it because of an impairment, that they needed it to work, and that it was an expense. Now, what do you have to do for that? Well, you have to save the receipts for Social Security and let them know about these expenses. And then Social Security is the agency that approves or denies ERWIs. But I will tell you right now that in my view, Social Security is extremely liberal about these issues, okay? And so if you can show them that it was needed because of work, needed because of an impairment, and paid for out of pocket, and you can show them the receipt, lo and behold, it will be counted as an impairment-related work expense. Now, I said there's going to be a list in the Red Book, and let me give you some of these right here. First, work-related equipment and assistance, attendant care services, employment support services, some, not all, transportation costs, co-pays and over-the-counter medication, durable medical equipment, residential modifications. And I just said some transportation. And the reason I said some transportation is the following. If an individual can take public transportation, a bus, a subway train to work, then they cannot claim a taxi. But if an individual can not get to work via public transportation, then they could claim a taxi. If an individual lives out in the country and the individual says, well, gee, I can't get to work because I live out in the country, but not because of their impairment, they can't claim it as an ERWI, because it must be because of their impairment, it must be needed for work, and it must be an expense out of pocket. So keep in mind, it's got to be needed because of the impairment. Very important there. That was another great question. Durable medical equipment, like a wheelchair. Residential modifications, so the person can get out of the house to go to work because of their impairment, can all be counted. Someone just said, is lift lock considered public transportation? That is a great question, and let me answer it very, very specifically. Lift line is considered public transportation, but lift line can charge double what the buses charge. So if a bus charges $2, but lift line charges $4, then basically the extra $2 paid for by the individual for each trip will be considered an impairment-related work expense. That's another really great question. We're getting some wonderful questions here. I'm going to, in fact, go through these right now because they're all wonderful. Someone says, examples of worries. For those on low income subsidy who pay copays ranging from 110 to 330, can these copays be counted? Can you elaborate on types of over-the-counter medication? Great. Okay, first, can those copays be counted? $1.10 to $3.30? Absolutely. Pay for out of pocket? Needed for work? Needed because of an impairment. Over-the-counter medication. It used to be that you could only get Prilosec as a prescription drug. A lot of people have acid reflux, and the acid reflux can be severe and can cause people not to be able to work if it gets very severe. Lo and behold, nowadays it's an over-the-counter medication. If a person can show that they need that medication because of their impairment, obviously they need it for work, and they're paying for it out of pocket, now that it's an over-the-counter medication known as either Prilosec or Omeprazole, that can be counted towards an ERRI. Absolutely counted towards an ERRI. Another great question. Let's see if there's other questions here. I want to keep answering them. Okay, next question is, how does an advocate help figure out what the allowable expense is for employment support services? Well, let me just tell you, it all depends. In our case, it's going to be the out-of-pocket. Whatever the individual is paying for that employment support, that is what is going to be counted as an ERRI. And the reason I mentioned that is that, as you know, there are lots of agencies that will provide 100% of a job coach for the first 3 or 4 months. And then they'll say they'll pay for 80% for the next couple of months. And then 50% for the next couple of months. Whatever the out-of-pocket cost is to the individual, that is what gets counted. Okay? And yes, a job coach can be considered an employment support for students and adults if and only if the individual with a disability is incurring the expense. And if it's being shared by that individual and others, only that portion of the expense that's being paid for by the individual gets counted. Okay, someone says here, what about those for whom Medicaid pays for employment support through the SHCBS waiver program? Is the person paying for that out of pocket? If the answer is no, then no. So the answer is no. It must be paid for by the individual, not by Medicaid. If the individual is paying for $3 of it as a copay, then that $3 can be an ERRI, but not the entire amount. Great questions. Great questions. These examples always bring up some wonderful questions from everybody. Now, for ERRI's purposes, large expenses may be prorated over a period of 12 months in order to receive a bigger bang for the ERRI buck. And what am I talking about? Well, look, let's take a $6,000 ramp, okay? If a person, okay, has a $6,000 ramp and they spent that in 1 month, they could claim the whole $6,000 expense as an ERRI in 1 month, but how is that going to really help that individual when their SSI check would have been a whopping $761 altogether? So they can count it over a period of 12 months. Now they've got a $500 per month ERRI for 12 months. And when you've got $500 per month, remember, for ERRIs, you get $1 in SSI for every $2 spent. That basically means that if you claim a $500 per month ERRI, your SSI check will be $250 higher. So that's a very, very good work incentive. Now let me show you the impact. I keep saying divided by two, and you get up to half the ERRI cost back. Well, look at the calculation sheet again. Gross earned income, then student earned income, right off the top. If you haven't used the general income exclusion, it comes off. The earned income exclusion, Look at this now. Erwies impairment related work expenses gets deducted also. But then it gets divided by two. And that is why you only get up to half the Erwi cost back, because it's divided by two. Now, my friends, I'm going to go through the next polling question for you, because I want to make sure that everybody understands it. And that polling question reads as follows. With Erwies, SSI recipients will get back up to 100% of what they spent on the Erwi. True or false? That they're going to get back up to 100%. And I'm hoping that once again, we are going to get 100% correct answers like we did with the last polling question. Okay? Hoping that that will happen. Now, Michael, once again, I don't see the that it's been launched. I want to make sure that it's been launched.
Yes, it has.
Okay. Very good. I got it, Mike. Thank you. Every time I ask you, Mike, all of a sudden it comes right up. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. So we've got, in 40 seconds, 80% of you have voted. There is a 20-80 split right now, okay? 80% of you are correct, and 20% of you are incorrect. So, and in fact, we've got almost a 90% vote right now. Come on, folks, vote, vote, vote. Vote once, vote twice, vote often. So here we go. I'm going to close the poll, and I'm going to share the results. And the results show 19% of you said true. And look at the question. With Erwies, SSI recipients can get back to up to 100%. Well, no, they can't. Because if you looked at what I just showed you on the slide, right there on the slide, you will notice that all you can get is back is up to half the Erwies cost. Not the entire amount, half the Erwies cost. Everybody got that, right? You can only get back up to half the Erwies cost because of where it is on the SSI budget calculation worksheet. Now let us move on. This is an incredible, incredible work incentive. Blind work expenses. Now you'll notice right away that when we talk about an exclusion here and the incentive, you don't see the words blind related. You see the word blind work expense, not blind related. So look at what SSA will do. They will exclude ordinary, hear that, ordinary and necessary expenses attributable to the earning of income. Ordinary and necessary expenses. A relationship to the impairment is not required in the blind work expense program. Not required in the blind work expense program. Items or services do not need to be related to the individual's disability, but the individual must be eligible for SSI based on blindness. And we're going to see how this works in about a minute here. Now, this is going to blow you away. For those of you who have never heard about this incredible exclusion, okay, it's going to blow you away. The first one is simple, guide dogs. The person needs them, right? So that's not a big deal. Fees, professional association union dues. Do you hear that? Just exclude it, no problem. Transportation to and from work, any transportation, exclude it. Trainings to use items, programs reasonably related to work. Doesn't even have to be related to work, just reasonably related to work, excluded. Taxes withheld from paychecks, excluded immediately, right away, 100%. Work-related equipment or services excluded. Non-medical equipment like uniforms or childcare, amazing, excluded. Meals consumed during work hours, you hear that? Excluded. Mandatory pension contributions, excluded. And of course, drugs, medical services, medical supplies, attendant care services, etc. Now, let me just tell you that I know a couple of individuals who are friends of mine, who happen to be blind, who happen to work, who happen to earn a decent amount of money, who still get almost a full SSI check and Medicaid. And that's because the taxes are withheld, mandatory pension contributions are withheld, or their transportation costs to and from work are withheld, and even the meals consumed during work hours are withheld. So it's an incredible work incentive. But it's not just that, because if you will recall, I said to you before that if a person has blind work expenses, the individual gets back up to 100% of the cost. And why is that? Because of where it falls in the order of deductions. The blind work expenses are allowed after the division by two. So it's a dollar for dollar. So look at this example. I'm going to give you this example just so you see it. Gross earned income, $1,900 a month. That's a pretty good earning. That's almost $24,000 a year. They've got, no, they're not a student, so it gets all gets counted. You take away the $20 disregard, that leaves 18, oh, well, that's a little typo there. That leaves about 1,800, but that's a typo. It is 1,880, that's just a typo, yeah. Take away 65, it's 1,815. Divided by 2, 90750. That's how much their countable earned income is. But lo and behold, because they have blind work expenses of $565, they only have countable earned income of $341.50. So their SSI would only be reduced by $341.50, even though they're earning $1,900 a month. And I know people who are earning that much, and actually their blind work expenses are higher, and they get a full SSI check. Amazing work incentive, okay? And now, because I want to stress the difference between an impairment-related work expense and a blind work expense, I'm going to take you to the next polling question. And the polling question reads as follows. With blind work expenses, SSI recipients will get back up to 100% of the blind work expenses. True or false? Okay? With blind work expenses, SSI recipients will get back up to 100% of the blind work expenses. True or false? And let's see how folks do on this one. And I expect some wonderful, wonderful responses here. And as of 33 seconds into it, 80% of you have voted already, and 100% of you have been correct. So I think individuals in this webinar understand the differences between impairment-related work expenses and blind work expenses. Impairment-related work expenses have got to be impairment-related, whereas blind are just ordinary and necessary expenses. not related to the disability, and impairment later work expenses are taken off before the division by two, so you only get a 50% benefit, whereas blind work expenses are taken after the divided by two, so you get the full 100%. And let me just tell you, I'm going to show you the results right now, and this is great results. 100% of you were correct. It shows that folks are understanding these principles, and it makes me very happy, very, very happy. Now let's go on to the next concept, resources. Let me just tell you, this is one of my, I get so upset with the way this happens to work in the SSI program. Let's look at the definition first. Resources, cash or other liquid assets or real or personal property that an individual owns or could convert to cash, which can then be used to provide for food or shelter. Okay? Now look at that. Cash or other liquid assets. Now, you have to understand that it's not as simple as all that, because the next thing you know is the following. You have money coming in to a home. And let's take me for example. I'm on SSI and my Uncle Sam sends me $1,000 for my birthday. That is income in the month that I get it. So lo and behold, listen to this. In the month that I got that money, I was entitled to no SSI, because $1,000 is unearned income. I get a $20 disregard, which leaves me with $980, which is above the $761, because I live alone in New York. So I get no money in that month. Now, if I haven't spent all of that money in that month, any money that's left unspent at the strike of midnight on the first of the month of that following month, it becomes a resource. So let's assume that out of that $1,000, I spent $500 and I still have $500 left over. So that $500 that's left over is counted to my total resource allotment, which in 2011 is still $2,000 for an individual. That's the resource limit. And $3,000 for a married couple if they are both SSI recipients. Now this is incredible. Think about this. That is an amazingly low amount. Do you know that in New York State, if a person is poor and they are applying for Medicaid, they can have resources of up to $13,800 for a single person and $20,100 for a couple? But for SSI purposes, all you can have is $2,000 for an individual? Staggering, really, really, really staggeringly low figure. The next concept that I would like to cover is the issue of Medicaid and SSI. And the reason I wanted to cover that for you is because in New York State, an SSI recipient automatically qualifies for Medicaid. It's automatic. As long as the individual gets as little as a dollar in SSI benefits, the Medicaid is automatic. In other states, some other states, 11 of them to be exact, the SSI recipient must apply separately for Medicaid. But in New York State, it's automatic. If you get $1 in SSI benefits, you get Medicaid automatically. And I mentioned the other states for you because I know that oftentimes families move from different states, and not all the states have the same rules. And so I wanted to make sure that everybody understood that concept. Now, let's look at SSI and Section 1619B Medicaid, because this is an incredible little program that most people know nothing about. Under Section 1619, you can work and still be eligible for Medicaid, okay? Which is great. That's wonderful. And in fact, you can work, you can lose your SSI payment due to getting more income from work and still be eligible for Medicaid. Everybody hear that? Let's take Ed Lopez again. Ed Lopez is getting $761 in SSI. He goes to work. At first, he's making a few hundred dollars, so his SSI is being reduced. A little while later, he's making a few hundred dollars more, so his SSI becomes a little less, but he's got a lot more money in pocket. Eventually, he gets offered a promotion, and he comes to you, and he says, oh my goodness, but if I lose my SSI, I'm going to lose my Medicaid, and I don't have full health care benefits, and I need them for my medication and my doctor's visits, or else I'm going to be in terrible shape. Simple as that. Terrible, terrible, terrible shape, he says. So, you can say to them, don't worry, Ed Lopez. Since you are losing your SSI because of work, you will still continue to receive Medicaid because of this very wonderful program called the 1619B program. Now, under this program, they're going to continue doing an annual review, and the person's disability must continue. Simple as that. It must continue. Now, I've got a couple of questions I want to cover. About 1619B, wouldn't it just make sense to enroll this person in the Medicaid buy-in program for working persons with disabilities? Oh, that's a wonderful question. And I'm going to tell you right now that I'm not really sure, and I'll tell you why. And if you were in person, I would have you stand up, and I would say to you, take my arm. And so, April, you'd be taking my arm right now. And I'd say, this is the connection between the SSI program and 1619B. And the reason I mentioned that to you is that that connection can be very important. Let's look at that connection. If you say, I no longer want to be on 1619B, I want to be on the Medicaid buy-in program, okay, you have to basically have either too much earnings or be above the resource limit. By doing that, after 1 month, your benefits for 1619B get suspended and the Medicaid buy-in kicks in. After 12 months, your 1619B gets terminated. Your Medicaid benefit through the Medicaid buy-in program continues. But if you lose your job, you then, since you no longer have a connection to the SSI program, have to go back in and reapply for SSI or SSDI all over again. Whereas if you had 1619B and you lost your job, all you have to say is, Social Security, I'm not making money anymore, and they'll just put you right back on the SSI program automatically and immediately. And that's why I often say to people that it does not make sense to just get rid of that SSI eligibility, because if you go to the Medicaid buy-in program and you are away from 1619B for 12 months, you lose your connection to the SSI program. Next question. If a person receives a back paycheck from Social Security due to an error in past calculation and his resources rise above $2,000 US dollars, what can he do to keep his SSI benefits? If there is an error in past calculation, okay, basically, and then they go over the resources, what they are going to be asked to do is that they're going to be asked to, quote, repay the overpayment. And then that gets rid of any resource problem whatsoever. Another great question. So, for 1619B, the person must be otherwise eligible for SSI. The unearned income must be within the SSI's limits. The resources, like we just mentioned, must be within SSI's limits. And now let's look at this earned income threshold. For the calendar year 2011, New York's earned income threshold is $45,454 per year. So that basically means that an individual whose wages are below $45,454 that meets the other criteria will be able to keep their Medicaid despite working. Now, if the earnings went above that, if they went above that, okay, New York has a special threshold. And what SSA will do is they'll examine their medical Medicaid expenses and the other non-Medicaid supports to determine if there is an individualized threshold that's applicable. And here's what that means, okay? Let me put that in English because I always am like blown away by the way, you know, this whole individualized threshold works. Let's take someone who's in a wheelchair who needs attendant care services. They're getting Medicaid. And lo and behold, the cost to the state for that Medicaid is about $100,000 a year. What is said is the following. They'll take that $100,000+ a year, plus the double the federal benefit rate altogether, which is about another $16,000 a year, and they'll say $100,000 plus $16,000 is about $116,000. So Ed, as long as your income is under $116,000, given that your medical expenses are so high, you can still keep your 1619B. So you only apply the individualized threshold if the medical expenses are dramatically, and I mean dramatically high, and only when they are dramatically high. Now, before we move on, I'm going to take us to our fifth and last polling question. And that polling question reads as follows. SSI recipients who lose their SSI cash payment due to earned income will also lose their Medicaid benefits. True or false? SSI recipients who lose their SSI cash benefits due to work will also lose their Medicaid benefits. True or false? And let's see how people do on this last one, okay? We will see how people do on this last one. We've got 85% of you, 90% of you who've already voted in 29 seconds. That's a record, folks. You guys are terrific. Absolutely terrific. Terrific, terrific. So in 40 seconds, you've already got almost 100% of you have voted. And that's great. I'm just going to close the poll. And I'm going to share the results. The results show that 100% of you said false. And that's absolutely correct. You are all 100% correct. If you lose your eligibility to SSI cash benefits because of work, you can still keep your Medicaid. And that is an incredible incentive. I've got to tell you that I used to go into training sessions. And I will begin a training session on Medicaid by asking how many people in the room knew what 1619B was, and we used to have no one answer it correctly. No one knew what it was, and if they did, had heard about it, they didn't know what it meant. Now when I go into a room, I get about 60% of the people who know what it means and can answer the question correctly about what it is. And that's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. And my goal is to be able to go into a room and have about 90% of the people answer that question correctly. So that is great. Now, I've got another question here, which is right on target. It's an incredibly excellent question. And Kelly says, is the switch from Medicaid to 1619B automatic? And the answer, I've got to tell you, is I only wish it was always automatic. But it's supposed to be automatic. But oftentimes, something goes wrong with the computer system. And this is probably more information than you need. But in order for everything to be done properly, the following must occur. First, the Social Security claims representative must go to the state data exchange and go to field 50 and put in a B code that says 16, that means 1619B. Once that code is in there, when the Department of Social Services checks in the month or at the end of the month to see if the person is eligible, they'll see that there's 1619B and the Medicaid will continue automatically. But oftentimes the claims rep does not put it in. And when they don't put it in and they just list the income, it defaults to the person lost their SSI because of income. And they don't know if it's earned income or unearned income. And thus, it then becomes a not eligible, and then the person winds up having to go to the Social Security office to have them do it right, to get a letter from them so they can take it to the Department of Social Services and reinstate their 1619B. The code is in field 50, and it's a code B that gets put into the data field, okay? A code B. Great questions here, my friends. Just some great questions. As we near the conclusion of today's webinar, there's a couple of things that I want to make sure that I remind you of. The first is that we have a wonderful website. It's nymakesworkpay.org, just what you see up there, New York Makes Work Pay, and then it's, of course, .org, all one word. We also have a hotline, and that hotline number is listed there for you. If you call it, that hotline, they'll take a message, they will call you back within the hour, and they will be glad to answer any questions you have. That hotline also has a TDD number. Secondly, I want to remind everybody here that work pays in more ways than one can imagine. You know and I know that it pays to work for an individual if they're on SSI because they're going to have more money in pocket. But it's the intangibles that I want to remind everybody of. When a person with a disability returns to work and does well at work, the joy that they get from work is pretty amazing. I can't tell you how often I will meet people on the street whom I have helped to get back to work who will stop me on the street and tell me how happy they are now that they are working and not just sitting around the house anymore, they'll say. That it gives them such incredible energy, that it makes them emotionally stronger. And so work pays in more ways than one. Just want to let you know that. Now, my friends, next Tuesday at 10, we will be doing the second webinar in the series. It's on the SSDI program. Then in a couple of in about a month, we'll be doing two more webinars, one on the plan for achieving self-support, one on the Medicaid buy-in program, and then in the last month, in February, we will be doing two more webinars, both on overpayments. The first one on the basic concepts of overpayments, and the second one on how to complete a waiver of overpayment or change of recovery form. And very important sessions. I'm going to encourage you all to join me and my co-presenter for a couple of them, Ray Sabula, as we go through these important issues. I want to thank you all for your participation, and I want to wish you a very wonderful good day. Take care.